All right, then we'll get started. Yeah, okay. Prior to receiving the brachas, in order to set the mood, Yitzchak asked Esav, last week's parasha, to prepare food for him, which Yitzchak presumably was going to eat. And the Rishonim, the Balei HaTosfos over here, the Moshe Zakenim, are already bothered. How could it be that Yitzchak was going to eat from the food of Esav? Esav was an Oved of a Dezerah, who was presumably not careful and meticulous about kashrus himself. How could Yitzchak rely on his shechita and his food preparation? So the Balei HaTosfos actually explain, and they answer, that Yitzchak never ate from the food of Esav before. This was the first time. And maybe he was actually overly optimistic in terms of Esav's level of observance. And he didn't realize that he was only a bit of a desire. Maybe he didn't realize that he was not careful, meticulous about kashrus himself. And this was the first time he was actually going to eat. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw to it that Yaakov Avinu intervened and prevented Yitzchak from eating from the food of Esav, as the Gemara tells us, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't bring takala to behemten shel tzadikim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't bring machalas asuras even to the animals of tzadikim, and certainly to the tzadikim themselves. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu here protected Yitzchak from eating from the food of Esav, particularly exactly for this reason, because you can't presume that it was kosher. However, others suggest different terutzim, that perhaps the avos, even though they volunteered to keep the Torah and the mitzvahs before it was given, maybe volunteered mitzvahs asay. They didn't volunteer mitzvahs lois asay. The rest of the Maharal explains to the Gor Aryeh in defense of how Yaakov Avinu married two sisters, even though that's prohibited, that maybe the avos only volunteered to do mitzvahs asay, not mitzvahs lois asay, and that would solve this problem too. But in the end of the day, this is a ganz pilpul, both in the Rishonim and the Achrayim. How could it be that Yitzchak was going to eat from the food that Esav prepared for him when Esav himself wasn't careful about kashrus? But this issue, even if we leave the Parshas HaShavua for the moment, this issue comes up in the contemporary setting in a few different scenarios. One could have, certainly in the Baal Tshuva community, a person who themselves is Shomer Torah and Mitzvahs and careful about kashrus, visiting with parents who are not Shomer Torah and Mitzvahs and not careful about kashrus. And the question becomes, is he permitted to eat in their house? Well, they'll give him every assurance that they're only shopping in the kosher stores, preparing it in the way that he or she, the Baal Tshuva, asked him to prepare it. And does the child have the right to rely on their parents that they're going to be respectful of his lifestyle and his level of observance to prepare kosher food for them, for him or her? Or one could imagine the reverse scenario where you have parents who are Shomer Torah mitzvahs and careful about kashrus, and loyal, and you have a child who goes off the derech, and the child himself or herself is no longer careful about kashrus, and now wants to host the parents in their home. And the parents, make as a stipulation for their visit that it will be contingent upon the child preparing kosher food for them. Can they rely on the fact that the child gives them every assurance that they're going to prepare kosher food? Are they not permitted to rely on the child in that situation? Similar, but somewhat of a different scenario than Yitzchak, who was eating from the food that was prepared by Esav. So in general, as we know, the Gemara tells us in Masechet Gittin, that we have a principle called Eid Echad Neman Bisurin. Even though in some areas of Halacha, such as Dine Mamanis and Dine Nafashis and Davash Abierva, you require two witnesses, as the Pasuk says in Parashat Shoftim, Al Pishnaim Eidim, Oshlosha Eidim, Yakum Davar, or Yumas Hameis. You need two or three witnesses, and we derive a Davash Abierva from Dine Mamanis, because the Pasuk says in connection with Gittin, Ki Matzaba Ervas Davar, he found something objectionable with her. She was engaging in arayos, and therefore he chooses to divorce her. So just like the Torah uses the word davar there, we derive xerashava, davar mi mamon, kimatsu by ervas davar, al bishnaim eidim oshlesha eidim yakum davar. That just like by dinay mamon, it's required two witnesses, so too, davar should be ever required two witnesses. However, as it relates to isav heter, that's religious matters, kashrus, or any, almost all the halakhas that are found in Yoredeya, as opposed to chayshim mishpat, or even ezer, so I guess Yoredeya or Chaim, those kind of halachos, Isur v'Heter, one witness is enough. As the Gemara says, Eid Echad Neman Bisurin. What's the source for that principle? It's a big machlekes, Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi's opinion is, it's a svara. What is the svara? The svara is, it's a logical argument. Why? Because in order to have kosher meat, you require shechita. In order to have kosher produce that's grown in Eretz Yisrael, you have to first take off chumas and maizos. So who's going to do all of these things for every single individual? Is every person going to have to shech their own meat? Is every person going to have to grow their own produce and separate their own shumas and maisers because he can't rely on anybody else to do so? He can only believe himself? So that's untenable. You can't function in that way. The point is driven home by the Ravid in his comments on the bottom of the Rift, the Maseches Pesachim, who questions, well, how is it that a husband is permitted to believe another member of his household who prepared, well, you know, a meal? Or how is anybody able to believe anybody else in the house that the food that they prepared is kosher? If it's not for the fact that Eidech and Bisur, and then when it comes to these matters of what's considered kosher food, what's not considered kosher food, or other ritual matters as well, that one witness is believed. If that's not going to be the case, we're not going to be able to function in the house, believing other people and the food that they prepared, or we're all going to have to shech their own animals and grow our own produce, which is certainly something that's not going to be productive. So Rashi therefore argues that this is a svara, must be, that Eid Echad is Nehem Abisur. Tosfos brings a source from the Pasuk in Parashas Metzora, and the Pasuk says, with regards to a Zava Gedola, who after she stops bleeding, she sees for 3 days, not during her normal menstrual cycle, and today we assume that every woman who bleeds, even a regular needle, who's seeing blood on her menstrual cycle, is considered to be a Zava Gedola, that they all, the Zava Gedola and the contemporary needle, have to count Shiva Nekiyim before going to the mikvah, 7 clean days, they have to count, as the Pasuk says, v'safra la shivas yamin. And then she could go to the mikvah to become tahor. So she has to count those days. Who's counting the days and verifying that she was tahor and she's no longer bleeding? So Gemara says in Ksubis, Tosfos cites it over here in the second line, that v'safra la la liyasma, that she counts the shivan akiyim herself. So she's the one who's verifying the fact that she is tahara. And she is believed, not only for herself, but vis-a-vis her husband as well. So you see from that pasuk that Eid Echad is never be certain, because if she's believed in that area to verify, to ascertain that she is Tahira, presumably other matters of ritual purity and impurity, right, or Isva Heter, in terms of what's kosher and what's not kosher, should also be able to be resolved based on an Eid Echad as well. So, and from here we derive the principle, Eid Echad Nehem B'Yisurin. Yeah.
Is Zava Gedola really only affects her and her husband, though, if somebody's making...
No, it should be Tamei too, but Anid is also Tamei, so it wouldn't be a substance.
But that affects absent people as well?
Could be, yeah. So that's the general principle, right? Eid Echad Nehem B'Yisurin. What if the person, though, is not careful about this area of halacha about which they're attesting? So that's what the Mishnah says in Maseches Bechiras. If a person is choshud al davar, then he cannot serve as a judge vis-a-vis that matter, and he cannot testify with regards to that matter. If the person themselves, therefore, is not careful about Trumas HaMaisris, he's considered to be an Amharetz, and he's not Neman with regards to Trumas HaMaisris. This is the premise of numerous Mishnayos throughout all of Seder Zerayim. In terms of Demai and other areas, who's considered to be Neman, who's not considered to be Neman, who is an Amharetz, who's not an Amharetz, has to do with whether or not the person is careful themselves. If you're careful about it, you believe it. If you're not careful about it, even if you're only doing so because the Yetzer Hara got the better of you, you're a Mumar L'Teyavon. You Ochel Nevelos, you eat non-kosher food, not because you have any bone to pick with God, you're not a Mumar L'Hachis, but Mumar L'Teyavon, he's not in control of his own desires, doesn't matter. You're not believed vis-a-vis, you might be believed in another area of Halacha, but you're not Neman, you're not believed in with regards to that particular area of halacha. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, over here, Oiz Dalet, HaChosh Adachol Dvarim HaAsurim, if a person themselves is not careful to eat kosher food, Bein Muchosh B'Sotay, Bein Muchosh B'Sotay, whether he's not careful about an Issa Torah, or even if it's only an Issa Midrabanan, he's careful by and large, but he cuts corners. It might even be only cuts corners vis-a-vis an Issa Midrabanan, doesn't matter. Since he's not careful, meticulous about all of the halachas of kashrus, he's not neman with regards to any of them. Ein lismach alav bohem v'im nisareach imay. If you're visiting by him, you're not allowed to eat the food that he prepares. So even though eidecha neman bisurin, that is true. That's only a person who only believes in the area of halacha about which he is careful. And therefore, going back to our situation we're discussing, if you have a child who's a baal tshuva is visiting by his parents, who themselves are not careful about kashrus, the parents would not be able to enjoy the principle of Eid Echad Nehem B'Yisurin. Even though normally that is the principle, if a person is testifying that the food is kosher, they believe that's only if you yourself are careful, not if you yourself are not careful. Yeah.
Esav was very careful about Kibra Ba'im, and would he be able to?
No. We'll get back to Esav in the end, yeah. We'll go back to Esav in the end. But no, if you're not careful about kashrus, you're not neman about kashrus.
But if he's careful about Kibra Ba'im, then he would be careful about kashrus.
We'll get to your point, maybe. We'll come to your point in a roundabout way. But let's just focus, strictly speaking, no. You forfeit your rights vis-a-vis Eid Echad Nehem B'Yisurin, and if you yourself are not careful about that specific area about which you are testifying. Do we ever award a arbitrary ne'emanos to a person who otherwise, normally speaking, would not be believed. Meaning they don't fit into the traditional categories of ne'emanos, but on an ad hoc basis, can we sometimes believe people who are otherwise not believed? So we do have a precedent for this, based on a Gemara Masechta Schulin. The Gemara there is talking about if you have a meat pot, meaning there's a meat dish in the pot, meatballs, cholent, and a drop of milk falls in. So does that one drop of milk aser the entire pot? So even if there's a roif in the meatballs, in the cholent, keneged, the drop of milk, meaning way more meat than milk, it could still be a problem, even though normally we follow a roif, achrei rav mahatois, the concept of bittul b'roif. But here, if you can taste the flavor of the milk, we say tam ki ikar. The flavor is like the milk is present, and it would be prohibited. So it depends on whether or not you can taste the milk or you can't taste the milk. If you can taste the milk in the meatballs, then it's a problem. If you can't, it's permitted. How are you going to figure out whether or not you can taste the milk in the meatballs or not? So the Gemara says, just figure it out. Taste it. You can't. Because if it's prohibited, you're just violating Nisar in the process. So what should you do? You give it, says the Gemara, give it to a non-Jewish cook to taste. He's, you know, an expert in what flavors of foods are supposed to be, and he'll be able to tell you whether he can detect the flavor of milk in the meatballs, like a sommelier, right? A person who's able to pick out the flavors that are in wine, so he can pick out the flavors that are in the meat and tell you if there's a milky flavor to them. If it is, then it'll be prohibited. If not, it would be permitted. What is this? So again, an akum, though, right, a non-Jew, is typically not believed when it comes to what is kosher food and what is not kosher food. He himself is not careful to eat only kosher food, and yet he is believed in this instance. Why is he believed? So that is a big machlekes harishonim. Taisus there asks, well, you know, why is he believed? Afagav the evikah chavimu, even though he's an evikah chavimu, not careful about kashrus, came into kfeilu, since it's his profession to be a cook and a chef, loy meshakesh loyafsudim nasai. He's going to be careful not to lie, to lose his professional reputation and his livelihood. You know, so he's going to be careful to tell the truth in this setting, because otherwise it can negatively and harmfully impact his professional reputation. So it's what's known as Lomara Umnusayo. A guy's not going to forfeit his professional reputation. This comes up not only in the area of kashrus, could come up in other areas too, as we'll see in a second. So that's what Ti'imas Kfeilu is based on, is because the person is a professional cook and chef. The Rashba argues that that's not what Ti'imas Kfeilu is based on. It's based on a different principle. It's what's known as Mesiach Lefitumo. Sometimes you can have, in certain areas of halacha, you can have a person who's otherwise not believed, meaning they don't fit into the traditional categories of those who are ne'eman in that setting. But that's only if the person is testifying formally. But if you ask him about a derech agav, meaning we're just schmoozing, and I don't tell you why I'm asking you this question. So a lot of times people are going to be more truthful in the comments that you get, derech agav, that you get off the cuff, right? You want to hear what the people really think, you have a hot mic. And then you get to hear what people really think. When it's off the record, then you hear the real truth. So if you're speaking to him, what's called lifitumo, he's just speaking, he doesn't realize what he's saying is going to be impactful, so then we award sometimes greater ne'emanos to a person who otherwise would not be believed. So over here as well, the Gemara develops this principle in Bava Kama Kufi Yudalad, it's known as Mesiach Lefitumo, a different situation where this halacha applies. So maybe this is another example of Mesiach Lefitumo. The Kfeila, the non-Jews, only believes if he's commenting Derech Agav. Meaning I ask him, hey, what do you think about this cholent? What flavors do you detect? Apricots in the spring or milk? Right? So if he detects, the barley, the beanie flavor, you know, what kind of meat is this? I sense the flanken, I notice some ketchup and some barbecue, some hot sauce in the cholent. And then he goes, and there's a hint of milk in there, you know, so then you know that there is milk. If not, but you can rely on it because it's Mesiach Lefitumo. The Rambam understood this principle in an entirely different way. The Rambam understands that it's because it's a Milsa Davidi Legluye. The Gemara says, when you have something that will be able to be verified, Lo Mishakri Inchi. No one's going to lie about something that you could go and see yourself. If you go and see yourself, people don't lie. Because they'll be made to look like fools. So the Jew, if the non-Jew says that there is no flavor of milk in this stew, the Jew's going to eat it. Then he's going to see that, you know, that there is a flavor of milk, and the non-Jew will be made to look like a fool. People don't like looking like fools, so people don't lie about a Milsa Davidi Legluye, something that can be later verified. Halacha lemaisa, the Shulchan Aruch quotes this idea that if you have a drop of milk that falls into a meat pot, you can have a non-Jew who's a professional chef taste it and let you know whether or not he senses a milky flavor or not. If he does, it's also. If not, it's permitted. The Rambam writes that we don't do this, the Ashkenazim. Writes over here on the second line, voice of Simon Sadi Bey Sif Aleph. I'm the command Simon Sadi Ches. Today says the Rambam, this is the practice by Ashkenazim. We do not rely on the Te'imas Kfeila. If a drop of milk falls into a meat pot, we always ask, is there 60 times the volume of the milk in the meat pot? If there is, we presume you can't taste it. If not, we presume you can taste it. That's not always the case. You can have something that's called avidiu taima. You can have some ingredients that are so concentrated, if you put one drop in, you can taste it, you know, with diris in this pot, right? So then the rules of shishim wouldn't apply. But in most settings, we would say, if there's 60 times the milk that fell in, it's batel b'shishim, we assume you can't taste it. If not, we assume, if there's no shishim, we assume that you can. Why don't we rely on te'imas kfeila? Why not? So Rabbi Kiva Eger writes, Lo yadati tam nochem b'zeh. I don't know why the Rambam rejected what the Gemara said, that you can rely on asking the non-Jew to taste it for you. He says, but maybe it's because, he speculates, maybe it's because we have two competing reasons, main reasons. What is the reason for, or what's the basis for Te'imas Kfeila? Is it because it's his professional opinion and no one's going to risk their reputation to lie just to be machzil Jews in Averis for no gain, no personal gain? Well, you know, why would he lie about something and risk his own personal reputation? And even if there is a gain, he's not going to risk his professional reputation. Why would people do that? They have much more at stake. Or is it because of Mesiach Lefitumo, as the Rashba told us? The person over here is just having a conversation off the cuff, off the record, and you get to hear what they really think. So Bekiva Eger suggests that we want to be machmir for both shitas. The problem is they're mutually exclusive. They can't coexist. Why? Because if the guy is offering his professional opinion, he has to, it's on the record. That's on the record. Mesiach Lefitumo is off the record. That's the whole purpose of Mesiach Lefitumo. You're not asking him his professional opinion. We're just shooting. We're just shooting the breeze. What do you think about this cholent? What flavors do you detect? The hot sauce? Milk? Right? But if he's offering his professional opinion, that's on the record. So then, that's not by definition Mesiach Lefitumo. You can't have Mesiach Lefitumo off the record and on the record of a person who is giving their professional opinion. Professional opinions are always, going to be on the record. So since the two can't coexist, Rabbi Kiva Eger says that's why the Rambam abandoned the whole thing, and today we only rely on shishim, we don't rely on Te'imas Kfeila. But this idea, which Te'imas Kfeila is probably based on, that no one would risk their professional reputation to lie, is applicable not only with regards to Te'imas Kfeila, but applies in other settings too. Over here, the Shulchan Aruch quotes in Simen Kuf Yud Dalet Sif Hei, that there was a wine that was made of pomegranates that was used for medicinal purposes. Yayin rimonim shemayt from the refua. I don't know what it was meant to heal or to address, but it was a medicinal item. Now, wine, I've never had pomegranate wine, but pomegranate wine apparently tastes like grape wine. Grape wine that's produced by non-Jews is always going to be prohibited. That's stam yenum. It should be not allowed to drink wine that's produced by non-Jews, all the reasons about that. We've discussed it in the past. You're not allowed to drink wine that was produced by non-Jews. Do I have to be afraid that the non-Jew who's selling the pomegranate wine mixed in some grape wine? Because the grape wine is cheaper, just like today, grapes are cheaper than pomegranates. Grape wine is cheaper than pomegranate wine. So do I have to be afraid that he mixed in some grape wine into pomegranate wine and I can't rely on the non-Jew? So the Shulchan Aruch says, no, you can rely on the non-Jew. Why? Even though the pomegranate wine is more expensive than the grape wine, it would be to his benefit to dilute the pomegranate wine with grape wine, which is prohibited. Since people are careful to drink only the pomegranate wine for that medicinal properties that it has, he's not going to risk his reputation as a pharmacist or as a distributor for the pomegranate wine to dilute it slightly and make an extra buck, because it's going to ruin his entire reputation. And so too says the Rambam, anything you buy from a specialist that is supposed to have a certain concentration and purity to it, you can presume they didn't dilute it with prohibited substances, because no one is going to ruin their parnasa and their reputation for that small margin of profit. This is part of the basis of Rav Moshe's tshuva to allow milk that's produced in the United States, even when you didn't have a Jew that watched the milking process from the beginning to the end. Of course, one of the things that Chazal prohibited that we consume is milk that's produced by non-Jews, lest they come to mix it with milk from a prohibited animal. Cow's milk, because since the cow is a kosher animal, its milk is kosher too. A camel is a prohibited animal, and just like the camel is usher, the milk that it produces is usher as well. Yoytzim and usher. So lest the non-Jews come to mix prohibited milk with kosher milk, you always have to have a Jew that watches the process from the beginning to the end. However, that's what's known as Chalf Yisrael, as we know. But Moshe argued, though, in the United States, where the government regulates the production of milk, and in many European countries this is true as well, but not in all of them, so that's why you have to check, when you travel abroad, you have to check whether what the laws are in that place, to know whether it has the same, whether Ramesh's cool applies there too. But at least in the United States, the government highly regulates milk industry, and no, Ramesh argues, no milk producer is going to run the risk of losing their license or their reputation by diluting their cow's milk with some other kind of milk. You wouldn't do it. You wouldn't do it. Ramesh goes one step further, and he says, since we're so confident that they wouldn't do that, it's as if a Jew watched the process from the beginning to the end. And it's Chol Yisrael Mamish. That's okay. Some disagreed with Ramesh, some accepted Ramesh, but most of the people Ramesh Meikra didn't. We can rely on Ramesh. Some are Mahadat Havdafka Chol Yisrael that's actually watched by an Anju throughout the milking process. But that's what Ramesh is basing himself on. Partially this principle that no one's going to risk their reputation for some small gain, for some small profit, or to commit some small error. And it's relevant not only here, it's relevant in Hilchos Yichud, with having Yichud with a professional, a therapist, and things like that. All these different kinds of situations can perhaps be affected by this principle that a person is not going to risk their professional reputation. So then let's get turning back to kashrus though for a minute. So why don't we say the same principle with regards to kashrus? Let's have a non-religious Jew, or even a non-Jew mamish, be the kosher food salesman in town. And why can't we argue, I don't need an extra hashgacha, I don't need a mashkia, because since his whole business is to sell kosher food, why can I say, well, there's no way he would substitute kosher food for non-kosher food for that small profit and risk his whole niche of his business of being the kosher food market in town? That's a question the Magen Avraham asked, which is a very obvious question. Once we understand this principle, no one's going to risk their reputation, well, then why not allow the non-Jew to run the kosher supermarket as well? So Magen Avraham here suggests that the only time we apply this principle is when it's something that not only are Jews careful about, but the non-Jews are careful about it as well. Meaning the Yayin Rimonim was a refuah that the non-Jews cared about as well. The non-Jews care about the milk purity and content as well. That's not only something the Jews care about, the government cares about it too. So then we apply the principle, no one's going to risk their parnas of that small margin of profit. But if it's only something that Jews care about, like operating a kosher supermarket, then we don't apply this same principle. David says in Magen Avraham, the Otum Yishari Liknos Basim Yaakum Togar Kishayim Yishik Shera, because Mishum Duwam Arnav Shayun, certainly we would not say that the non-Jew can run the kosher supermarket simply based on this principle alone. Because it only applies when it's something that universally is cared about, not just that the Jewish community cares about. There's a riot to this from a sif in the Shulchan Aruch with regards to Hilchos Shatnez. Let's say I go to a tailor who's making a suit for me, and I ask him, is there shatnez in this fabric, in the suit? He's a non-Jew. He says, no, there's no shatnez in here. Trust me, there's no woolen linen. Can I trust him? Shulchan Aruch says, you cannot trust him. Ain't no nemon. Why not? You think he's going to risk his reputation to lie? He might. You know why? Because it's only something that Jews care about. It's not going to ruin his reputation as a tailor, as a haberdashery expert, because no one else cares about this except for the Jews. When it's something that only the Jews care about, then we do not apply this principle. So when it comes to kashrus, moving back, can we officially award, sometimes award a certain amanus to an individual, even though they're not normally entitled to it based on the traditional categories of the amanus that we have? Yes, sometimes, like by the Ti'imas Kfeila, but that's only if it's something that actually affects his parnasa, like the chef who's professionally offering his opinion as to what flavors exist in this food item. That's something that everybody cares about and could affect his reputation if he's going to lie. Or the purveyor of the Yayin Rimonim, the guy who's making medications and things like that. But if it's not something that everybody cares about, it's just kosher food versus non-kosher food, that's what the Magen Avraham told us. That's only something that Jews care about, not everybody cared about. You can't necessarily apply this principle. This idea, though, that people wouldn't risk their parnasa to lie, and therefore we award a certain arbitrarily award them a certain status of believability, trustworthiness, even though they're not usually entitled to that by the traditional categories of ne'amanus and eidos and things like that. Also, is comes up in the Gemara Masechtas Nida with regards to the ne'amanus of doctors. The Gemara there is talking about a woman who has a certain discharge, and she doesn't know if it's dam nida, in which case she's tamea, prohibited to be with her husband, or it's some discharge that's benign. That is, you know, halachically, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It's not blood. So the Gemara says, what about a woman who has a certain discharge? What's halacha? Is it blood, or is it something that's more innocuous? So I says, well, they asked the Chachamim. The Chachamim asked the doctors, the non-Jewish doctors. Shalul l'raifim. This woman has a wound. She has a medical condition. She's not menstruating. It's not dam nida. And she's tahara. And then they brought a proof. They said, you know what? I'll prove it to you. How so? Because they told them if it would be blood, it would dissolve in water. If it's some other kind of discharge, it won't dissolve in water. If it dissolves in water, then it's blood. So they put this item, this discharge, they put it into the water and it didn't dissolve. So they showed it wasn't dam nida. If it would have been dam nida, it would have dissolved. So Beis Yosef, as well as the Rashba over here in his Chuvis, Oysir Aleph, prove from here that you can rely on non-Jewish doctors who are testifying about medical facts that affect halacha. Even though normally they're not careful about, he's not careful about Hilchas Nida, and he's certainly not an aid, a kosher aid at all, he's believed with regards to this situation. Because Chazal awarded him a certain kind of a status. And therefore, he is believed. Because they asked the Reifim, is this Dam Nida or not? And they believed what the doctor told them. However, the Rush in the Tshuva responds to this Rashba, and he asks him, 1 minute. No, look back at the Gemara. What did the Gemara say? The Gemara said, they performed a test. They proved it with laboratory results. They put it into water, and they saw that it didn't dissolve. And that proved that it wasn't blood. So maybe it has to be verified by some second form of verification. Right, but just strictly speaking, you know, just to believe the doctor alone wouldn't be enough. However, Chevra, let's just think for a minute. Where did they get the test from? Who told the Chachamim this difference between benign discharges versus dam nida, that dam nida dissolves in water, other discharges would not? They heard that from the Goyish doctor. So the test itself requires you to believe the doctor. That's what the Shvus Yaakov, the other Achrayim, defend the Rashba, the Beis Yosef, that here the test itself was only told to the Chachamim by the Reifim. However, at the same time, the Darkei Moshe, that's our most commentary on the tour, disagrees with this Rashba and says you cannot believe the doctors. The only time you can believe the doctor, vis-a-vis halachic matters, or matter that affects halacha, is if it's verified by a second form of verification, like that Gemara where there was a test that proved their results, even though they only found out about the test from the non-Jewish doctor. This is a huge issue today in contemporary Psak halacha. To what degree can we believe doctors when they testify about certain things that affect halacha? The Pesach Tshuva in Hilchas Nida quotes him like some sefer from an Adib Yehuda, from the Panim Iris, his grandfather, that the doctor can create a suffix in halacha, but cannot, we can't rely on him alone. So when it comes to most areas of halacha, right, a suffix is enough. Rabbi say, a guy goes to a doctor and asks, can I fast on Yom Kippur? Do I need to eat? The doctor says, I think you need to eat. So the doctor created a suffix. A suffix pikuach nefesh. But all you need on Yom Kippur is a suffix pikuach nefesh to allow you to break your fast. You ask the doctor, is this a kanis nefashos for which we have to violate Shabbos or not? Can wait till Matzei Shabbos. The doctor says, I think you should violate Shabbos, a non-Jewish doctor. Can you believe him or not? Well, the place can say, it's at least a suffix. It's a suffix. So a suffix, though, is good enough to violate Shabbos. Suffix pikuach nefesh is doicha Shabbos. To create a vadai heter, that the place can be somewhat hesitant to rely on the doctors unless it's verifiable by some sort of laboratory test. Today, most assertions of doctors are verifiable. Most of them have a test that could probably be proven. And therefore, even if we're not performing the test, you might have the right to rely on the doctor because it's a milsa davide legluye, a principle we had earlier. A doctor's not going to lie about something that can easily be verifiable, right? So the doctor says, I think she has this condition. You could probably do a sonogram and figure it out or some other, you know, full exam and figure it out. So, you know, and see it for yourself. So since it's verifiable, you know, perhaps that would lend the doctors more credibility. So whatever degree we do believe the doctors, we don't believe the doctors, is not really the topic at hand, but we do see that you awarded them some believability. Some place can rely on them entirely, some not as much. What is the basis for their namonos? So Shmuel Yaakov explains the basis is that no one's going to risk their parnasa to lie, even if when it does benefit them slightly, people are not going to risk their whole livelihood to lie. People are going to be more careful when it comes to their parnasa. And same thing is true over here with the doctors. This is not only something that Jews care about. This is stuff that that everybody cares about. That the doctor should be correct about his medical information, whether something is a life-threatening illness or not. So usually, we end up being more machmir than the doctors. By the way, a lot of times the doctor says you don't have to break your fast, and the Rav will tell you to break your fast. We treat it like a suffix second. But whether you're getting accurate medical information, is this dangerous or not, is it life-threatening or not, is something that everybody cares about, not only Jews, and therefore we can rely. Or is this, where's the blood coming from, is something that everybody might care about, and therefore it's, you can rely. That same principle, that no one risks their professional reputation, would apply. It could be we could believe the doctors for a whole other reason. And that's because what other choice do we have, right? The only source of medical information we have is the doctors. Who else are we going to believe if not the doctors when you have halacha that requires a medical determination? This goes back to where we started in Ois Beis, to the principle of Eidech and Emvisum. We brought two sources for that principle. Rashi derived it from a svara. How can a person trust those in his household when they prepare food that the food is kosher if he's not going to rely on Eidech and Emvisum? Tosfos brought a pasuk. A woman is believed to count Shiv and Akim for herself. And as it affects others too, even though she's the only one who's verifying that she's clean, and unless that's good enough, you see from there, with regards to matters of Issa Heter, one witness is good enough. Eidach and Nevin Bisurin. Why did Rashi like Tosis Svara? Or Tosis Sub Pasuk? Tosis Source. When you have a source, you don't need to come up with your own Svaras like Rashi did. You have a source, you have a Pasuk, Yehuda Vali Lakra. Well, once you have a Pasuk, what do you need anything else for? What was wrong with Tosis Pasuk? So the Ramban, back in Ois Beis, suggested what was wrong with Tosis Pasuk was, is that, well, what other choice do you have? Who else are you going to believe if not the woman about counting for herself? You certainly can't have two witnesses there to verify that the woman is not bleeding anymore. That would be the height of pritzus. You can't have two people there when the woman is checking herself. Chas v'shalom. So you're going to have to rely on her. That's the only option that's available. When that's the only option that's available, so then sometimes we'll believe those who we otherwise would not believe because we're forced to do so. It's a similar rush. And that's why Rashi had to come up with the svar. Rashi had to come up with a different source for Eidach and Bisurin. There's a similar rush. The rush over here, Oysid Gimel, is commenting on Gemara Masechtas Kiddushin, which discusses who is believed to identify which child is the Bechar. If you have two twins that are born at the same time, which child is the Bechar? Who's going to know? So Gemara says the father is believed, if he was there, because the Pasuk says in Parashas Ki Seitze, he recognizes the Bechar to give him the double portion. And the Gemara says, Yakirenu Achirim. He can recognize it to others, meaning he's the one, the father believes to identify which child is the Bechar. And the mother, in a similar fashion. But the Gemara also says, Achaya, a midwife, is believed to identify which child is the Bechar. What's the nemanus of the midwife? This is Dinei Mamonis. Who's going to get the double portion? Why are we believing the midwife? The Chaya. She's not normally, she's possibly, there's certainly not two witnesses. Why do we believe her? So the Rush explains, because we have no other choice. Who are we going to believe if not the Chaya? Sometimes no one else is there. Sometimes no, so we have no choice. You have to believe the Chaya. This is quoted Halakha L'maisa in the Ramah. If the rare situation, I hope, happens, of a fight breaking out in the Ezra's Noshim, where there's like a melee, and people are walking away with damages and claims and counterclaims. This one claims, this one punched me, and they're entitled to damages or nizikin. So we have to somehow sort out, who is chayev to who. Well, who's going to be able to testify about something, a fight that broke out, a brawl that broke out in the Ezra's Nashim? The men, hopefully, weren't there. It was only women. A woman is normally pasulietos. So who's going to verify the facts of the case? In order to determine who's obligated to who. So says the Ramah, that in that situation, where there's no men that are commonly found, we have the right to rely on women. Even in Dinei Mamonis, where they're normally not believed, because what other choice do we have? And the Pais can quote this far as well, with regards to being Mater Naguna. In order to be Mater Naguna, we have certain leniencies in terms of who will believe, even though those who are otherwise sometimes possibly Eidus will believe, with regards to Nemanos Isha. If they're Mesiach Lefitumo, or sometimes right, a guy who's Mesiach Kofitumo, he doesn't realize that we're listening very carefully as to who died and who, you know, who went missing during the war. And he lets us, drops a hint about that this person died. If he's just talking about a derech agav, off the record, we sometimes can get a better sense of the truth than if he were being, you know, if he knows what we want him to say. So the Gemara says, certain times you can believe a person may see a chafitumo, or certain psulei edus in the area of edus isha will believe in order to be matar and aguna. But we even have a line there. A person who's pasuli edus, who's deiraisa, who's testifying on the record, will be pasul either even for edus isha. However, at the same time, the pasuk suggests, let's say a person is in, the husband goes missing in a situation where there's no kosher witnesses found. He went off to war, all the other troops in the battalion were non-Jews. Who are you going to believe that this person was killed in battle, if not the non-Jews who were with him in his battalion? So some Paiskim raise this. Rabbi Yosef Engel has a famous Tshuva La'aguna in his first volume of the Isus Yosef, where he makes this suggestion. If we have no other choice but to believe the Goyim who were part of the same troop, same battalion, because there were no kosher witnesses available in that situation. Rav Asher Weiss applies this in a very common situation. People who are going through fertility, advanced fertility treatments, and participating in IVF. In order to participate in IVF, the man has to donate the sperm. The woman donates the, you know, harvested egg. It's harvested in the laboratory or in the office. And then they're mixed as an embryo in the laboratory. And oftentimes they make, you know, multiple embryos at a time. And only implant them one by one, or, you know, two or three, or whatever, however, you know, number they implant at a time. But they preserve some in the laboratory. So there are various organizations today that will provide a hashgacha on the embryos, to make sure that everybody's embryo is labeled that it belongs to them and there are no mix-ups in the laboratory. You could do this on a sperm sample too, on eggs that are harvested as well, not only on embryos. There are multiple organizations today in Eretz Israel, here in America, that provide this kind of hashgacha service. Make sure that there's no mix-up. But who's believed to provide that kind of hashgacha service? Is a woman believed to provide that kind of hashgacha service? Yes, no, we could debate. You know, is this Issuv HaHeter? Is this stuff should be here? Whatever it is. Is a woman believed to testify on behalf of others when it comes to the, you know, Eidach and Abisun? Is she only believed to testify for herself? Is she believed to verify things on behalf of others? One could debate the issue. So, Rav Asher Weiss has a tshuva in the Minchas Asher, the last tshuva in Chelek Beis, the Minchas Asher, Shas tshuva is Minchas Asher, about this issue. Who's believed in terms of providing this kind of hashgacha? So, Rav Asher first suggests, you probably don't need a hashgacha in the first place. Why would someone go out of their way to deliberately cause people grief by swapping the embryos with each other? So it could be they'll do it to improve their stats. Let's say he believes this embryo isn't that viable, the other family has a viable embryo, and the doctor always wants to improve his stats, so he'll take the family that's younger with more viable embryos and implant it in the older person because he knows that their embryos aren't that viable. Maybe, Rav Asher isn't concerned with that eventuality. He thinks it's unlikely that you would have people who deliberately would do so. Why would they deliberately cause people grief? So you probably don't need hashgacha in the first place. Even if it's not necessary, it's probably a good idea, right? There was a case just happened in September in Rishon LeZion that they did a genetic test on a baby a woman was carrying, determined it wasn't her baby, which was implanted. As part of IVF, they determined it wasn't her baby or her husband's baby. It wasn't related to either one of them. It was a mix-up in the laboratory. They have since shut down that fertility clinic in Rishon LeZion. But it doesn't only happen there. It can happen. You Google this issue. IVF mix-up rate. It happens. And one time is one time too many, right? One time is a reason for everybody to be concerned. Moshul Mal Davidoyma, you know why on the top of medicine bottles there's that tamper-free lid? That wasn't always the case. When I was growing up, it didn't exist. It happened because in the early 1980s, someone was poisoning people by lacing Tylenol with cyanide. He went into the pharmacy, dropped cyanide on Tylenol, and put it back on the shelf. There was no seal with cotton on top, and the tamper-proof didn't exist in those days. It was a bottle like you have now. Every bottle has seals, and this, even the Snapple bottles have seals. But in those days, it wasn't like that. So you unscrew the jar of pickles, put it back, and there you all have the snap top so you know that it's never been opened. The vacuum pack wasn't like that. So you opened it up, dropped cyanide in, and a few people got killed. Because of that, the whole industry changed, lost the level. Because one time happening such a thing You know, one guy walks on top of the, you know, onto the airplane with a bomb in his shoe. With Dara Dara's now, we're all taking off our shoes when you get onto an airplane because someone once did that, the shoe bomber. So because of that, we're all stuck with this forever and ever. So it's probably a good idea to have Ashgacha. If this happens once, that the embryos get mixed up, that's one too many. And we should probably have Ashgacha just for that reason. But Al-Pi HaLacha, it's not necessary. Yeah.
What do you do with that baby?
How should I know? No idea. It's a scary situation.
How long in did they find out?
You can Google the story if you're interested in that. Yeah, crazy story. So Rav Asher says he doesn't really think you need Ashgacha, but even if you do, who's going to risk their professional reputation? These people are, their career is over if this happens to you. So the Morum Nusayu, a person's not going to risk his professional reputation, certainly applies. But then Rav Asher suggests, well, who else is going to do this verification? You have to have a lot of times. The woman is the only person who's going to be in the room when they're harvesting the eggs. So it has to be that you're going to rely on a woman. Otherwise, you won't have any other option. When you have no other option, a lot of times we award an emunah to people who otherwise would not be entitled to it. But again, moving back to our kashrus situation, if the person who's visiting, the Baal Tshuva is visiting his parents who are not observant in kashrus, or the parents who are visiting by the child who went off the derech and no longer keeps kashrus, even though they give them their assurances that they're going to provide them with kosher food, there's no professional reputation at stake. So the ti'imas kfeila paradigm or the doctor paradigm wouldn't really apply here. And moreover, this is not something that everybody cares about. This is something that only certain individuals care about, in which case lomar umusaya, that whole concept wouldn't really have any application. But do I, on an individual basis, have the right to say, you know what, I believe you? Even though the person is not entitled to that, Alpi, the traditional categories of halacha and emunos that we have, he's a chashed al adavar, and the general rule is the person who's chashed about something is not believed, but I believe him. Do I have the right to make that kind of cheshbon? So the Gemara tells us in Masechus Ksubas the following, over here, Oiz Tezva, Gemara Ksubas Peheh Mid'alf, that there was once a situation, the Beis Din of Rava, that one woman accused another woman of owing her money. Now what happens if someone accuses you of owing you money, and you deny the whole thing? You have to take a shvua. Not a shvua midai raisa, a shvua midai rabbana, known as a shvuas heses. If you're a kefir akol, this guy says, you owe me $1,000. I say, I never met you before, shalom aleichem. I don't have to do anything else. That's enough. I deny the whole claim. And you have no proof? Shalom al Yisrael. Midai rabbana, they made you take a shvuas heses. So Rabbi was going to make this woman who was accused of owing money, make her take a shvuas heses. His wife was there, the daughter of Rav Chisda. And she whispered to her husband, she said, Yodana bode chashud ashvua. I know this woman from the neighborhood chats. I'm telling you, she's not believed. She's a liar. Sociopath. She's not believed. So Rava said, fine. You don't take a shvua. He said to the one who accused her of owing money, he says, you take a shvua that she owes you the money and I'll make her pay. That's not the halacha. But he trusted his wife. And his wife said to him, this woman is puzzle. She's, chashud al ashvua. He believes his wife. What gives me the right to do that? In Dinei Mamnis, you require two witnesses. So Gemara says, because Rav Chisda defended, and he said, Kim li begava, I know my wife. And if my wife is telling me, I trust her, that it's accurate information. He had the right to believe her, even though it's in the area of Dinei Mamnis. The Gemara then goes on to say, present a similar case, that Rava was once having a din Torah between a lender and a borrower. And the lender had a shtar that the borrower owed him money. Now, usually, if the shtar is in the hand of the lender, that means that the loan is still active. That's why it's still in the hand of the lender. When the loan is paid off, it would usually be given back to the borrower, right? So it can't be used as proof against him that he owes money. But here, it was in the hand of the lender. So that usually should mean that the borrower has to pay. However, Rav Papa, who was there, said to Rava, I know that this loan was paid. Trust me, I know the loan was paid. Rava didn't believe her papa. So her papa said, why? You believed your wife. Why don't you believe me? So that's when Rava responded. He said, my wife, Kim Libigava, I know her. Rav Papa, you, I don't know. I don't know in that way. And therefore, I don't trust you in that way. But what do you see from that, Gemara? That you have the right to award an emunah to an individual, even though they're not entitled to it necessarily. Al pi halacha. And the Gemara in Yevamos tells the same story. Amar Rav Yehuda, Kagon Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Mafik Nememoina Apume. He says, Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, I would be Moitzi Maman based on his testimony. The Gemara says, you'd be Moitzi Maman, but the pasuk says, Al Pishnayim Edim Yakum Davi. You need two witnesses for Dinei Mamnas. What it means is, Marana Shtare Apume. I would discredit a star based on what he said. If he said the loan was paid off, Even though the shtar is in the hands of the lender, I would discredit the shtar. It wouldn't be moitzi mamon, but I would discredit the shtar. But you see that even though the person is not normally believed, you have the right to award them a certain status if you do believe them. So Rav Moshe, I believe this is one of the most mechudosh tikkun tshuvos in Rav Moshe that's underappreciated, going under the radar. You know, in many tshuvos Rav Moshe are very mechudosh, and most people are quite aware of them. This one, underappreciated. But Rav Moshe was asked about our situation precisely, exactly, while Rav Moshe was still a Rav in Luban, in Russia, before he came to the United States, where there were children who were going off the derech. And the parents were Shomer Torah Mitzvos and careful about kashrus, but they wanted, or they needed, in their old age, to visit by their children. The children would be the ones to take care of them. But they were afraid to go because their children weren't careful about kashrus. So Moshe was asked, can they rely? And the children said, we'll provide you with kosher food. Keep it aviyem. They respected their parents. They said, we will provide you with kosher food. Even though we're not careful about kashrus, we want to honor you. We'll present you with kosher food. So Moshe says, if they trust their children to give them kosher food, they have the right to believe them, even though the child is kosher al adover. And Eidechanem Yisun should not apply because the child is not meticulous about kashrus, he's not believed about kashrus. If the parent trusts them to provide them with kosher food, they have the right to rely on them. Based on what? Based on that Gemara Masechtas Ksubis, just like Rava relied on his wife when she intervened in a din Torah, he said, Kimli Begava, I trust her. Rav Moshe says, you have the right to trust them. But we usually have a halacha, that Kravim Absulim Eidos, the Gemara says, even Moshe and Aaron, if you have two witnesses that are serving as Eidim in a case, even Moshe and Aaron, the greatest tzaddikim that ever lived, are witnesses together, the Pasul Eidos, because they're related. It's Xeris HaKosav, a car of his Pasul. So what gives us the right to override Dinim of who's Neman and who's not Neman? So Ramesha writes, Mechudash. Ramesha says, that's only if I don't know them personally, because you never know what happens in private. But if I know them personally, kimli begava, meaning I know them in private, I know them in public, I know who they are, I trust them. So then Rav Moshe says, even if it's extra halachic, even if the halacha doesn't provide them with nemanis, I have the ability to rely on them, as well as to me, and I'm permitted to eat that food. Rav Moshe was then asked in a subsequent tshuva here, Oisir Ches, about, well, let's say we have the store in town, the kosher grocery, that's operated by a non-religious Jew, but everyone in the town knows him. You know, Jaime, we all know him. Shmuli, but he's not religious. We rely on him. We trust him. Do we have the right to do that as a community, to have him operate the grocery? If we all trust him, we all trust him, do we have the right to do that? And Moshe says no. Because you don't really know what goes on. You're not really living in the house with them, like the Gemara said, that, you know, Robert didn't trust her papa. He trusted his wife, because his wife was living in the house with him. But if he's not living in the house with them, you don't really know them. You know, you think you know them, but you don't really know them. Sarah Moshe says, you can't do this. That was the tshuva for Rav Moshe. Rav Asher Weiss in the Minchas Asher, though, asked Rav Moshe that he doesn't think this raya is a good raya. It is a strong argument. Why? Because it says in Shulchan Aruch of Hinchas Mishpat the following thing, that when a dayan is judging in the case of Dinei Mamonis, there's lots of different things he has to consider, right? There's Raiv, there's Chazaka, there's Eidos, there's lots of different proofs that could be brought. Let's say a dying feels something in his gut, you know, a sixth sense, intuitively, he believes that this guy, you know, is right. But he doesn't have proof. There's no proof. But in the combination, you know, in everything considered, he feels like this guy is probably in the right and this guy is probably in the wrong. Can he pass him based on his, you know, in the aggregate, can he pass him based on his gut? So Sen Shulchan Aruch, yes, he can. Now, a dayan who only paskins based on what his gut is, that's a baich svar, right? You can't just paskin based on what you think is in your belly. But if you know halacha, but here, you don't really have a proof one way or the other, but he feels like this guy is right, then he has the right to paskin that way. If he feels strongly and he has, you know, convictions. So the Shulchan Aruch says over here, Yesh l'dayan l'odun dinei mamonos al pi hadvarm shedayto noito lehem shememas. If it seems to me, appears to me to be truth, I have the right to paskin based on that. Even though he doesn't have a raya, I could paskin based on what appears to me. So argues of Asher Weiss that Ramesh's raya, all that always even that Gemara is with regards to Dine Mominus, the Dine has a lot of latitude to paskin based on what he considers to be valid proof. And if his wife telling him something, or, you know, Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda telling you something sways you because you give them a certain emunah, then for you, that's fine. The dayan has a right to do that. But that's only in the area of dinei mamonos because the dayan is given great latitude to the tools that he has at his disposal through which to determine who's telling the truth and who's lying, who is obligated and who is who is entitled in a din Torah. So you don't really have a raya necessarily to our case. Rav Asher agrees with Rav Moshe, different reason, but it seems to me we could justify the psak of Rav Moshe, not that Rav Moshe needs my justification, but it seems that we could justify the psak of Rav Moshe based on a different Gemara and a slightly different svar. Why? The Gemara says like this, Maseches Kiddushin. Let's say a man is married to a woman. And so if two witnesses come and they testify before him that your wife was Mizana, she had an extramarital affair, he's prohibited to be with her. You need two witnesses, though. It's a davar shebi'erva. We learn davar mimamon. Just like in mamonis, you need two witnesses here, by davar shebi'erva as well, you need two witnesses. Let's say one witness comes and says your wife was Mizana. Does he have to separate from his wife or not? So Gemara there quotes Abaye that yes, then Gemara quotes Rava that no. Possibly Rava, he does not have to separate from his wife over the testimony of one witness. Why? Ein davar shebi'erva pachos mishnayim. To establish a woman's Mizana, you need two witnesses, not one. But the Gemara says, within Rava, if the one witness is believed in your eyes, like two, Rava ima hemelacha kebei trei zil afka vilo lo safka. If she, if one witness is believed to you, like two witnesses, that elevates the status of the one witness to become like two, and now he should divorce her. He has to separate from her. He cannot remain with her because he believes that one witness. He believes that one witness individually. Is that related to our case? So one might have argued, no, that's shavya anaf shechaticha d'isur. The Gemara has in a few places that if a person has the right to determine that something is asur vis-a-vis him. For example, let's say a woman says that she's anida. She comes home, she says to her husband she's anida. Even if in truth she didn't see any blood at all, she's prohibited because she declared about herself that she's anida. That's what's known as shavya anaf shechaticha d'isur. So talk over here. The husband was Shavya Anafshe Chaticha D'Yisura. One witness came. He doesn't have to believe the one witness, but he does. That's not because the one witness got an inflated trustworthiness, because I doubt it. It's because of based on the principle of Shavya Anafshe Chaticha D'Yisura. Yes, but how does Shavya Anafshe Chaticha D'Yisura work? What's the basis for that principle? That I have the ability to create prohibitions for myself based on my convictions, based on what I believe, or based on what I say. So the Ksois over here, Oyskov Beis, has a famous chakira. How does Shavya Nafshe Chaticha D'Yisura work? Is it mitam neder? That just like I could take a neder to prohibit myself from eating that which is otherwise permitted, and I created a separate prohibition for myself that only applies to me? Or is it because when it comes to matters that relate to me, I have a certain trustworthiness that goes above and beyond all other, general or traditional forms of believability? That I have an emonos vis-a-vis myself that's greater than all other witnesses or other forms of verification. Other neman al-asmoy, yosme meish. And the Ksois concludes, he believes Shavya Nafshe Chaticha D'Yisura doesn't work based on neder. It's not that I asked myself because of a vow that the woman is anida or that he's prohibited to be with his wife because she believes she was mizana. It's because matters that relate to him, he's believed more than anybody else. He's believed more than anybody else. And this is based on a Gemara Masechtas Krisos over here, Ois Chafalf. The Gemara says Masechtas Krisos. Let's say two witnesses come over to a person and they say, you ate chalev, you have to bring a carbon chatos. He says, No, I didn't. Does he have to bring the carbon chatos or not? The Gemara quotes the opinion of the Chachamim, no, he doesn't. Adam Neman al-Atzma Yosme Me'ish. Even though two witnesses told you have to bring a carbon chatos, he says, no, I didn't do it. Wasn't me. Wasn't. They said, yeah, it was chalev. It was you. We saw it. No, I don't have to. You don't have to bring a carbon chatos. That's based on Exeris HaKostim and Parashas Vayikra. The pasuk says, "Ohoda elav chaytasa." If a person is told about that he performed an avera, or he realized that he performed an avera, he has to bring a carbon chatas. And the Gemara comments, "Misach tuzivamas." Ohoda elav chaytasa. It becomes known to him. V'lo shidu acherim. Not that other people told him. It could be other people told him, but if he believes them, that's like it came from himself. But he has to recognize, he has to realize it himself. And there's a big mussar here. You can't fix a problem unless you recognize that there is a problem in the first place. So there's no karma chatos unless I recognize I sinned. But you have to recognize yourself. If you don't recognize it, even though the whole world is screaming at you, you performed an avera, it doesn't matter. I have the right to be believed vis-a-vis myself. Adam neminal atzmoi, yoysim me'ish. The Ksois compares this to the principle of Moed B'miksas, or Hoidos Baldin Kamei Edom Dami. That if I say I owe money, I'm believed that I owe the money. Because it's my money. That's what's known as Hodas Baldin Kamei Edim Dami. What is the source for that principle? The Ksais claims, again, the same idea. I believe vis-a-vis myself and my money more than other witnesses. And that's based on Xeris HaKasim of Maidim HaMiksas. I think we discussed it this year. The Pasuk says in Parshas Mishpatim that one of the Shavuos you have to take Midai Raisa is if someone says to you, you owe me money, $1,000. I just say, I don't owe you $1,000. I never met you before. Then you don't have to take a Shavuot Midai Raisa. But if I say I owe you, I don't owe you $1,000, I owe you $500, I'm Maidim HaMiksas, now I have to take a Shavuot Midai Raisa. Why? Because I was Maidim HaMiksas. But you see, the Torah recognizes my admission as relevant. To the degree that it triggers a Shavuot Daraisa, I'm believed vis-a-vis myself. If I say I owe you $500, then I owe you $500. Adam Neman will ask my Yosef Memeish. So if that's what Shavi and Afshak Adichud Yisur is based upon, maybe we can argue that functions in two directions. Not only am I permitted to, am I believed to prohibit items to myself to say that the wife is usher because I believe the one witness that she was Mezaneh, but I'm also believed to say that even though I don't have anybody who's testifying that your food is kosher, but I trust you that it is, that I should be believed. Shavi Anaf Shekadich Dissur should work in both directions because it's based on Adam Neman or Atzma Yois Memeish. So I should be believed in the matters that relate to me, and therefore Ramesha, you know, says, I think is, you know, we could justify Ramesha's psak based on this svara, that Shavi Anaf Shekadich Dissur works in both directions, and if I can be believed to prohibit items to myself, I could also be believed to permit items to myself if I believe that you're going to serve me kosher food, even though you don't have any nemanos al pidin. Even though you don't have any nemanos al pidin. Maybe that, you know, we can go back to Yitzchak and Esav based on that. Maybe he believed Esav was going to serve him kosher food, even though he knew that Esav himself wasn't careful about it himself. He trusted Esav. Maybe he was wrong to do so, but he trusted Esav. Maybe, you know, that has validity, and that goes all the way back to Ramesh's psak. And that's halacha lemaisa, that can be relied upon. However, we do have to caution people. A lot of times, people trust those who are not themselves careful about kashrus, that they say, I'm going to provide you with kosher food, we'll make sure we get pots, we'll get food from all the kosher stores. And sometimes people believe them. But the problem is, a lot of times, if you don't practice kashrus yourself, and you certainly didn't grow up with it, you don't appreciate how sensitive kashrus is. Yeah, like, come on, what? I just was missing one ingredient, so I went there. It doesn't really matter. Like, yeah, I told you I bought it. I didn't have that grocery store, so I went to a different grocery store. You know, it had some symbol on it. It looked like a kosher symbol, so I tried. If you don't grow up with kashrus, you don't really understand how careful Jews are about bugs, how careful we are about kosher symbols. They really matter a lot. You know, the devil's in the details. If you don't grow up with it, you really don't appreciate it. I can give a muscle to this. I don't know how many people here keep kibbutz. But if you have a family that is careful about kibbutz, that's coming to visit by a family that is not careful about kibbutz, and they say, oh, we'll have everything for you according to your standard, there is no way it will satisfy the person who's careful about kibbutz. Because the person who's careful about kibbutz won't use the kalim, won't have any crumbs on the table, they won't have any liquids near it. The other people are like, they never heard of this. It's like a different religion. They don't know anything about this. What, really? Matzah in the soup they got. Everything else that goes along with kibbutz, they never heard. Matzah pizza? Really? Also matzah pizza? They don't know anything about it. So they can tell you we'll be careful about it, but if you didn't grow up with it, you don't really appreciate the sensitivities that are involved. And Ramesh's case was in a situation where the children grew up in the house with kashrus. And then the Russian children went off the derech. So the parents were coming to visit by them, but they grew up with it. They understood it. It's a cultural thing a little bit. So they understood it. They're able to do it, you know, for their parents. But someone, let's say a Baal Tshuva, whose parents never grew up with kashrus, and they know that their child adopted this new lifestyle, and they want to respect it and, you know, honor his traditions and his convictions. If you didn't grow up with it, it's a really hard thing to adopt. In its full sense. But I do think, final thing, I do think it does have an application, and this could even have broader application, if you really trust a person completely, like a parent or a child, if let's say, even if they themselves didn't grow up with kashrus, if they order food from a takeout, kosher takeout, so kosher takeout usually comes wrapped in a double seal, if it's delivered properly with the proper hashgacha, wrapped in a double seal, if it's delivered. Let's say the person wants to open it before you get there, and they open up the seals. So can you trust them that it came from the kosher restaurant? They don't have to prepare the food. They only have to tell you it came from the kosher restaurant. If they told you it came from the kosher restaurant, they ordered from the kosher restaurant, and you trust them completely. Kimberly Begavo, I trust them that they respect me and they want me to be happy here and they want me to feel comfortable here. My parents want me to come to their house. The parents want to come to the children's house and I want them to come and feel comfortable here. You could presume that, you know, that in that situation, not preparing the food at all, that situation, of course, that why would they lie? They want you to be comfortable and you can believe them in that situation. Okay, I'm just going to...